you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat, this is an official colonial government broadcast.
And welcome to the Battlestar Galactica cast. My name is Mark Bernardin.
And I am Trisha Helfer.
Hey, Trisha, how are you doing? 6 feet away from me, as you seem to be.
I know, I've moved further away from you in amongst our chaos that is happening.
I know.
And this, I miss you.
I know, so far away.
You can't see what we just did.
No,
we just had a moment.
It's a whole thing. But it will be the last time we get to have said whole thing, because I think we are going to move to a remote version of this.
Yes.
Next time, as I'm sure that you guys in the world know that the world is pretty much going to lockdown protocols shortly. So by the time you hear this podcast, you may already be. And this was our last chance. There's not enough room on the door for both of us.
I'll miss your bright brown eyes.
I'll miss you so terribly, my dear. But alas.
But we will still conference in guests.
We will still conference
like
in guests.
Like we have today, we're not saying it quite yet.
No, but we
have a fabulous guest.
We have, yes. We've been wanting to talk to said guest for a long time.
Yes.
Because I have been a fan for a long time, and he did great work on this show and many other shows, but we'll get to that totally very shortly.
We're just teasing you for a little bit longer.
We very much are. But before we get to the Eye of Jupiter, which is this week's episode, what happened previously on the Battlestar Galactica, Trisha?
I love that you're asking me.
I am totally throwing this to you.
Eye of Jupiter, they were running out. There was a food shortage. There was a contamination.
On the passage.
Yes, on the passage. And, well, not on the passage, but it was called the passage.
Called the passage.
Oh, I suppose you're saying it was on the, never mind.
It's all good.
And yeah, there was a food contamination, so they were sending out to try and find food, and Boomer found a planet with algae.
Yes.
Algae.
Algae.
Algae. Did this last week, too.
It's all good. I'm going to relish it as the last time we get to do this in person, mispronounce things. And yes, it was the final episode of Luciana Caro, who played Luann Catrain.
Yes.
So she goes out in a blaze of glory, radiation glory.
Yes.
But yeah, and so it was a little bit of a way point, I think, between the story as it went before then, and then them like dropping the hammer and doing a Catrain cat. How did I give her every wrong nickname? And do a little bit of a cat send off. But now with the Eye of Jupiter, we are kind of in full swing.
We are. It's a continuation onto the algae. Algae planet. to get the algae.
Yes. But it feels like, you know, the passage teed us up to continue lots of storylines that we had been playing with before. The storylines of what's happening on the base ship, Deanna's obsession with the Final Five.
Hera,
whatever happened to baby Hera? What's going on with Lee and Kara?
Which I've got some questions for our guest about that one.
So many questions. So let's bring our guest in. Yes. Let's talk to our guest, Mr. Mark Verheiden. Hey, Mark Verheiden, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Nice to be here.
We're good. We're stockpiling our thoughts. we're hoarding our feelings about this episode, and we're going to unleash them right now.
Yes. Mark, you wrote this episode amongst many others. And
yes, while being a co-executive producer for Battlestar for how many years? The final three seasons? Two, three, and four?
Two, three, and four, yep.
Outstanding.
I came on season two.
Season two. What did you know about the show before you came on? Like, how familiar were you with it?
My how I got hired story?
Yes.
Basically, I got a call from my agent who said, Battlestar Galactica is looking for someone. And David Icke had remembered me from a show I had done many, many years earlier. I'd written a Darkman movie for him.
Ooh.
Straight to video Darkman movie.
Was that Die, Darkman, Die?
The one with Jeff Fahey in it. But he remembered me, and I got a call from my agent and said, would you be interested? And I'll be honest, I didn't know it was on the air. And this was after season one had actually run.
Mm.
I was on another show, so I guess I wasn't paying attention. And I remembered the old Battlestar, and it was like, really? They brought that back? Sort of thought, which is all stupid. Stupid in hindsight. But so they sent me the DVDs of the first season, and I just went, this is amazing. And went in and saw Ron and David, and they hired you know anything, then watched the whole thing over and binged it, and it was awesome. So...
And so when you came on, what did Ron tell you about sort of where the story was going to be going? Like, how much did he share? Or how much did he know?
Not an enormous amount. I read the Bible that they had. And I think when I came in, they were actually breaking episode 5 or 6 of season 2. Can you still hear me? Okay, I'm going to pause. So I think they were breaking episodes 5 or 6 around in there of season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so came as they'd already gotten a little bit of run on the season. And, my memory was just jump in and start helping work on stories. I remember my first day I was really sick, which fits this day. had a terrible cold, but went in anyway. So I was there for a little while, and then I started as a consulting producer, got promoted to co-exec, and then kept going. I actually don't remember a whole lot about what they told me the plan was in terms of season 2. I think maybe we're sort of formulating that going forward.
I love that you said that they didn't know much of what the plan was. And we heard from David Icke that the whole thing about the Cylons having a plan, that was all just basically like a marketing thing. Like they didn't really know what the plan was. It just made me think of that when you said it.
The last couple of episodes have been very much about the what are the final five? Who are the final five? We're even going to put a name and say it's the final five and not just the mysterious other Cylons.
Yes, the introduction of the final five, right? The last few episodes?
Totally. And so when did conversations about that begin? When did you guys begin to kind of zero in on that idea as a driving force for season 3 and beyond?
I don't know how much Ron would want this to be out.
He's given some pretty good...
I was trying to remember when we went. We had a story session in Lake Tahoe. I don't know if he's talked about that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very alcoholically lubricated session. It was really fun. We were there like 3 days, all the writers, and we weren't drinking the whole time. But that's where we figured out who the final five were. But I was actually trying to remember if that happened before this episode. And I don't know if it did. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember when we did that Lake Tahoe thing where we actually landed on who it was. It might have been later in the season. But the idea of the final five did come up pretty early. I think it came from Ron and David, which was we really wanted to change things up. They really wanted to change things up and suggest that some of the people we'd gotten to know really well over the two seasons were Cylons. So that's my, again, I just can't remember if we'd actually landed on who they actually were yet when I wrote Eye of Jupiter, although it feels like we might have because of Aaron Douglas's.
I was just going to say that because when I was watching it, sorry to cut you off there, but when I was watching it, it without trying to give away spoilers, but we're...
To a certain degree, we can't keep talking about it.
Yeah, we can't. But it... I know you're looking at me like, give away spoilers. It was on 15 years ago. But we've had a few people go, I'm just watching it for the first time as I'm listening along. But anyways, we've given away a lot of spoilers. But I did think about that with Chief Tyrell and his sense of, you know, the temple and finding it and all that kind of stuff. It made me feel like you guys had known that and wrote that way on purpose.
Yeah, the hazards of my memory. I can't remember if we'd had that session yet or not. I can't remember. We did land on it not too soon after this. I remember we really landed on it around, I think, episodes 14, 15, who we really wanted to be the final five. I do sort of remember. So the session in Tahoe may have been a little bit after this. We were still trying to land on who exactly it was going to be. And that was aside from the fun of going to Tahoe, that was a challenging process because, you know, picking who it was and why it was those people and how that would work for us or not work for us. We went through a lot of those steps trying to figure that out. But obviously it's a huge move to make five of the main characters Cylons.
Yeah.
Totally. What was the mission brief when you started breaking this episode? What did you know it wanted to accomplish?
I think just in general, this run of episodes was an attempt. Well, we were trying to, as far as the algae story goes.
Even the algae story and also like where you wanted these characters to be, because there's a lot of delicious ugliness going on here.
I noticed, sorry to interrupt again, but that's sort of what we do, is what's playing on the screen right now is where Dwala has given, Starbuck has just landed in one of her snazzy landings. And we find out that Starbuck and Lee are still bumping boots. Is that
knocking boots?
Knocking boots
or bumping uglies?
Oh, see, I always mix sayings. Bumping boots. I'm gonna go to bumping boots. It fits the times too. We're bumping elbows, bumping boots. They're knocking boots.
They very much are.
Yeah, but Dwala is. You can tell that Dwala is being a little bit more aggressive now.
Yeah.
With her and later in the episode as well, Sam.
Because they both know.
They both
know. Like each person's respective spouse totally knows what's going on. And they're just kind of business as usual. Like, we got to do this job. We're here. I don't like it. I'm not going to go see her. I know you are. And I know what's going to happen in that raptor.
It's heartbreaking because you just love Dwala. But it's also, I can't get over the fact, and Katie's one of my best friends, so it's nothing to do with Katie, but I can't get over the fact that over the last maybe five episodes or this season maybe, I don't like Starbuck. Yeah. Starbuck is pissing me off. She's like she's, you know, the hotshot pilot. Like, I've always loved the character, but she's done so many questionable things where she's just being a bitch. Like, in so many ways. And was that kind of on purpose of where her storyline is going? Was it kind of on purpose to take not just this episode, I mean, but she's done so many things that really make you kind of not like her. Instead of just being like a hotshot, she's, I can't think of specific things right now, but I've said this for a few times in a row. Like, she's just like the boxing episode, Unfinished Business. She was being mean just to be mean. And was that kind of like an arc, or was it just, did it just fall that way?
Yeah, no, I think we were playing up her self-destructive nature. I mean, that character always seemed to have that. And so it was self-destructive both personally, like flying recklessly, but also in terms of relationships. And so to, you know, keep the relationship going with Lee, I mean, I don't know if it was my line or not, but when I rewatched the episode, it was fun when Sam says, you know, she's cheated with me on other guys too. And you're kind of like, wow. And, you know, that's what we tried to do with these characters. When we started to mess with them, we really liked messing with them and messing with expectations. So it wasn't just like, oh, we're in love and, you know, it's too bad. We'll probably can't get together. It's like, no, she's pretty screwed up in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And she says that marriage, you know, she can't, she tells Lee that she won't, get divorced because she signed, you know,
it's a sacrament. Marriage is a sacrament.
It's a sacrament, but yet cheating isn't. Yeah. And she's like, well, it's less or whatever it was that she said. But you mentioned Sam later in the episode, he did say that. And I always thought, did he just say that to get under Lee's skin? Or was Kara actually
I buy that she actually was. I mean, I buy.
I read it the other way. I read it that, yeah, I read it that she just, Sam just, I literally made the note, go Sam. Because I was like.
The look on his face, though, was a dude who's been burned before. Yeah. And like everybody's got that like crazy hot person in their life that like, I know this is bad for me. I know this is bad. I'm going to get burned, but you got to put your hand in the fire. Otherwise you won't know not to get burned the next time. And Starbuck seems to be that person.
So self-destructive. And that's what made that character fun, was she's so complicated and complex. You know, you just didn't know. We always had fun just trying to constantly twist up relationships and never leave anything status quo very long. You know, the Baltar-Gaeta relationship, which I was actually rereading the script for this, and it appears like quite a bit of stuff got cut.
Really?
I don't know if we shot it, but I think there was a Gaeta-Baltar scene, which I don't think is in the show.
They never cross in the show as it airs.
So there was a Gaeta-Baltar scene that was in the script. And the other funny thing about when I reread the scripts today was the change in emphasis in some of the scenes that just evolved as we were working on the stories. I don't want to jump ahead too far.
Jump away.
Okay. Well, so in sort of like the story with Adama and Roslyn and the threat to nuke the planet, I think in some drafts, Roslyn was the one who really wanted to do it. And Adama was like, I can't, my son's down there. And that evolved when I watched the episode again into, you know, he was willing to do it. Even though he was down there, Roslyn was sort of the voice of, hey, your son's down there. Those are just things that evolved, I think, as we talked about the script and probably working with Michael Reimer, the director, and with the cast, you know, everybody that's so great. And, you know, it evolved. So
and opinionated. Everybody, it was a very opinionated cast.
there was opinions there. I remember one other scene we had at one point was after Cavill was leaving the ship, Adama didn't just say, you guys can go. He said, and I don't think this is in the cut, he said, throw him out of the airlock. And they just pitched him out of the airlock.
Really? Said,
that'll teach you a lesson.
That'd be cool.
But that, my guess is, and as you know really well, Tricia, they shot these things in 7.5 days. Some of that stuff just had to go, especially when we had a day of locations.
Yeah, I thought about those locations when I saw the temple, when he's first walking into the temple.
Yeah.
I wasn't there. Maybe I'm there and I just don't remember in later episodes or something, but, or the next episode, I can't remember, but I remember that. I think it was like with the special effects, the visual effects, obviously there's all the Eye of Jupiter stuff, you know, and everything, but it's actually just a bin, like a container bin somewhere in North Vancouver. And I remember specifically like the call sheet that day had, you know, this place is probably has asbestos and all this stuff because of what was stored in there. And everybody's supposed to wear protective gear and masks and everything. And you're like, and all the actors just kind of look at each other like,
we're supposed to do what?
We have to. And we get this all the time as actors, like everybody else is geared up and you're just like,
you go ahead in there, chump.
I guess we're just going to breathe in the asbestos.
Yeah, that was a cool location. I do remember that. And I think I had to do a rewrite that day. I can't remember. But no, I did remember touring that place. I think I don't remember what it had in it. I don't think it was that unsafe. But
yeah, probably not. We all survived.
Yeah.
But it's that way with, and not just on this, but in so many locations, right? It's to film in interesting locations, you sometimes get some interesting elements.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And
some pretty terrible.
Yeah. And so in the episode,
yes.
Tyrell has just found the Temple of Five, and has sort of radioed back to Roslyn and Adama saying, here's what I found. And I know my dad was, you know, a holy person. My parents were very religious. And so I kind of remember, but I don't know what it means. And then just as they're sort of like idly wondering, 4 Cylon-based ships jump in because stupid Baltar has found out stupid things about Hera and Jupiter and the cows. Who wrote all the hybrid stuff? Like who was the person on the staff who's like, I can write this kind of prophetic gobbledygook. That would make some kind of sense.
Well, I think I wrote some of that in that episode anyway. It was fun because it is just that. What I do remember is the final bit of it's him or what she says, it's you. Mm-hmm. And Diana thinks it's her, but it's actually Baltar and he's kind of freaking out. So, but the rest of it was just, I think actually I remember sitting around just kind of like with the other writers going like, what do you think? You know, well, this and that, and you know, this crazy, you know, garble, and it was fun to write actually. And she was really good too. She really delivered it well.
No, so. She killed it.
Yeah, she was great at it.
She was great at it. And so now, yeah, you know, there's a voice over the intercom, and it's Gaius Baltar, a voice nobody ever expected to hear again.
Yeah, because they're not launching Vipers in it. There's no, so they're like, they know something's up when it first comes on, and then there's a
they're
communication.
Hailing us.
Yeah.
Put it on screen. There's no screens, just on the phone. Because it's not Star Trek.
And then we see them being walked in, you know, under guard, and you know immediately that that's Boomer. And she's going to come into contact with Sharon.
Right.
And I made the note of like, is Boomer going to tell Sharon about Hera?
Yeah.
And but of course, you make us wait till later in the episode to find out. But
Do we ever understand? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, I had forgotten, too. It's been a while since I rewatched the show, and I'm going to do it again. I got time. do we all? How many plot threads we were juggling in an episode? You know, the Hilo, the Adama and Rosalind, the guys on the planet, the Cylons. I mean, it was insane the amount of stuff that we were juggling in an episode, so... I mean, I was looking at the script. I think the production draft of this script, the first one was 56 pages.
Wow.
And these are 43-minute shows, which shows you why so much stuff ended up on the cutting room floor, you know, and why we just didn't shoot some stuff. And that was always a real problem, I thought, that it's so frustrating to have a great show and then have to whittle it down to 43 minutes to fit the commercials. That was very frustrating. I wish they'd kept all that and DVD it, put them back that stuff back in, but it's, I guess, an expensive process. But
yeah, or if somebody would release, I don't know, NBC Universal script books of each season with the production draft so that you could just read the unexpurgated versions that didn't get, even the stuff you couldn't afford to shoot. Just here's 60 pages of Battlestar.
Has any network ever done that?
I mean, they released Buffy script books season by season. But not a ton others have done that. And, you know, maybe we should talk to some folks at Sci-Fi.
Just, that'd be great.
Just wet our beaks a little bit. Just a 5% off the top.
You Twitter people listening. You podcast listening people can tell us via Twitter if you would like that or not.
If you would buy it.
We won't have any say if it happens or not. But,
no.
But we
no.
can ask.
We totally can. And so now we get to this great scene, and I love this scene to death, where Baltar, Deanna, and Cavill are sort of facing down Rosalind and Adama and Ty. And Rosalind will not look at Baltar. She won't even make eye contact with him.
No.
You know, how much of that was in the script? How much of that was just on the day, on the stage?
I think a little of that evolved in the script, and some of it may have been on the stage, but the basic... It's funny, when I reread the script, the basic structure is all the same. I mean, nothing really changed. What changed was sort of emphasis and material within the scene, usually to make it shorter. So there were lines dropped and stuff like that. But I think that scene was pretty much shot more or less as written, just shorter. Like I said, there was a Gate of Baltar moment that we either shot or didn't use or didn't get shot. And I actually, it's funny because I remember being on set for some of this and having to make that call like or like the day or two before. We're just not going to have time to shoot that. And just sort of like, oh, that was a cool scene, you know, but we just didn't have time or something like that.
Is it easier when you're on set instead of just, you know, working off the script, right? You've written it and you love all the moments in it because, you know, you put it there on purpose for reasons. Is it easier, you know, when you know you have to make cuts for time or money or whatever it is it easier do you find doing it from straight from the script or being on set and seeing kind of how things have evolved already? And like, does it become apparent what needs to be dropped, or is it really difficult? Like, is it easier to do it from the page or from visual?
Well, I think, you know, if it's a scene that needs to be dropped, you know, for instance, the Gator thing, that probably happened before we went out just because we didn't have to set it up and do all the stuff we would have needed to do. For me, it's of course, I'll equivocate, it's both. But, you know, when you're on the stage looking at you guys making it live, you know, then you can start feeling, well, boy, maybe they don't have to say that much. Maybe the eyes are communicating that, or the expression, or the body language of Rosalyn. She doesn't really have to, I hate you, you know? I mean, it's coming across pretty good. So, you know, a little bit of that and discussions with Michael Reimer, the director of this one, you know, just to, yeah, I don't think we need that. Or what the writer often has to do is also say, got to keep that because that pays off in episode 9 or 10 or whatever. So, I mean, that's another reason to be there. But long story short, it's both. But if it's a scene we need to cut for production, then that has to happen sooner. If right. It's a scene that's just, you put it on its feet and it's 5 minutes long or 10 minutes long, and you just go, there's no way we're going to keep this. Then you start looking at what's the essential part of it. And that's working with everybody. Mm. That's working with, you know, the cast and the director and just everybody involved.
Yeah. I mean, that's the job of a writer on set, right? Is to be the sort of the shepherd for the ongoing story. Cause you're the only person there who knows, like, listen, we got to have this cause it's going to do this 4 episodes from now. We got to have this cause we set it up 4 episodes ago. Like, you have to be right. the custodian and defender and protector of the realm.
Yeah. Cause nobody else knows. It's all in your guys' head and in the writer's room and nobody else. Well, yeah. Maybe the director, like somebody like Michael Reimer, who is a consulting producer as well, not just an episodic director. But
Michael would have definitely known, you know, where we were going. But he wouldn't have been that far ahead because I don't know, I'm sure he was privy to sort of the room notes going, you know, 10 episodes ahead.
Right.
But he would have certainly seen outlines and stuff for episodes, the 3 or 4 upcoming ones. And he knew what we were trying to accomplish. So, I mean, that's a fun part of it too, just to be there and watch it come to life. That part's always amazing. Never get over it, actually.
Who was the most difficult actor to work with? who took notes the worst?
That's a very pregnant question.
I know. I just wanted to see if you'd answer it. I don't expect you to.
No.
It was Trisha, wasn't it?
No, I was too shy at that point, I think.
Everybody was frankly great. I mean, that sounds a little bit glib, but everybody was great. And, you know, if there were questions or issues that came up, they were never about sort of counting lines, you know, that sort of thing. Mm. They were always about the integrity of the material. And I'll have those discussions all day. If it's about, I just don't think my character would do this, or I think they might say this as opposed to that. I love discussing that because usually that makes the thing a lot better. So on this show, I'm sure we've all been on shows where that's not always the case, but on this show, it seemed like everybody was really knew we were doing something special, and we knew as writers and as producers, we were doing something special. And, you know, we all sort of like, you know, this is a team process here. It's not me just, or any of us just dictating what it's going to be. It's let's hear everybody's ideas. Somebody has to decide sooner or later. You know, right.
Like, yeah, there has to be a final decision. Yeah. And there was, but I remember, I've said this before, I remember so many times just having long discussions and finally like the ADs kick after blocking and the ADs kicking us out, like, go talk outside. We need to light this. Like, right. Or I told a story, I think once, of Lucy Lawless. When Lucy was first introduced, it was the episode Downloaded. And it was when we first saw the downloading tub and everything. And she kind of made fun of, she had a book and we were all in the green room and she kind of made fun of Grace and Baltar and I, cause we were sitting there talking about, well, how do you think this works? And what do you think? And like, we're really trying to figure it all out. And she was kind of making fun of us, like, wow, you guys are really taking this seriously type thing. And then, but it was like the next season she came back in a fuller capacity. And she just was right in there with us because she had then watched. She hadn't watched the episodes prior, like the season prior to starting, I think, or whatever. But she and Cavill did the same thing. Cavill.
Dean Stockwell
did the same thing. It was like came back after you. Because sometimes when you're cast on a show, you're cast so quickly. Like when I did Van Helsing last season, I didn't have time to physically watch all the seasons up before I show up, you know?
Right.
And then when you have a space of time now between, you know, season four and season five, I managed to watch a lot of it. And you have a whole, you're like, oh.
That's what we're doing.
Wow. You know, and I think that's what kind of, what they were saying too is, but we had so, I'm digressing, but we had so much discussion on the set and everybody was, to your point, everybody was very invested in the story, not just about, I only have five lines this episode.
Yeah. And sometimes you actually had to, you know, you dropped an actor for an episode, and not very often, but once in a while. And it wasn't out of, you know, malice. I mean, it was out of, oops, we just don't have the space to handle every single story. There's rare shows that do that either with regulars. That doesn't happen that often. And so anyway, but it was cool because I don't recall anybody going like, hey, what's going on? They understood that the story dictated that's what we had to do. So, again, a very rare experience, Battlestar. It was really special. I think we all look back on it. It was a moment in time that you always keep hoping you'll have another one like it. You get close, but that was pretty darn good. So
yeah.
Do you remember when the mandala motif first started being talked about in the room? Because I mean, I remember seeing it on Starbucks' wall in her apartment when we go back to her apartment. God, what is that? Beginning of season two,
I think so, yeah.
When she's going back for Sam. And then we're now seeing it on the sort of the plinth in the middle of the Temple of Five.
Right.
Plinth. That's a new word that I've never heard before.
Did I just make it up?
What is a plinth?
I think a plinth is some kind of, it's a bit like an obelisk. It's a stone.
I don't know that word edifice. Either. This happens a few times, Mark. My vocabulary's okay. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
So the mandala thing, like when did you guys hit on that as this was going to be part of our recurring storytelling?
I think I was there for that day. It was when we established the painting that Starbuck did. And I'm just trying to remember if that came out of, obviously we wanted a visual something that we could hang our hat on with the Eye of Jupiter, which by the way, this script is called Eye of Zeus Forever and changed Eye of Jupiter like 2 days before it went to second production draft or something. So I had a hard time finding it because, like, oh yeah, Eye of Zeus. That was what it was called. All my script was called Eye of Zeus.
So it was in your files as Eye of Zeus?
It was in my Eye of Zeus file, yes. I think that may have been the art director actually created that look. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it was based on something that Ron and David had sort of worked up. I frankly don't remember the origination of it. I do remember just though we wanted something that was a visual touchstone that, you know, started to talk about it. So the slightly more mystical side of Battlestar. You know, why are they sort of this thing coming into play? Which goes into later in this season, what happens in terms of various things, which I won't spoil. People haven't watched it yet.
Outstanding.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Which and where we are in this the screen now, we've had a couple of moments of importance of things happening for more next episode. Gaeta mm-hmm. has discovered that this planet, this mm-hmm. star, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is about to explode.
Yes, it's about to go right. supernova.
It's about to go supernova. So with the coincidence, and I think Gaeta prefaces the question of the coincidence of the Cylons and the humans finding the eye of Jupiter as the planet is about to go supernova and explode. What is the coincidence yeah. of all that?
I mean, Baltar tees that up earlier, and then Gaeta sort of underlines it, and even Adama's like, I'm not a religious person, but if this is the work of a higher power, then they have one hell of a sense of humor.
Yeah, I like that line.
That was, again, I can't believe how many plots we were balancing in this episode.
It's bananas, dude.
And now yeah. we've got Deanna with the whole, she's hidden it from the other Cylons, that she's sent a raptor down there.
Yeah, Heavy Raider. Heavy Raider, not a raptor. And yeah, like, so we've got another kind of Cylon baby civil war happening where the threes want to do one thing and the Cavils want to do something else. And so we're continuing that thread. And then we have
Six just feels left aside, pushed aside, because her two now lovers are like siding up on something and not telling her and keeping secrets.
She got bumped out of the menage.
Mm-hmm. Bumped out of the menage. I love that. I got to use that sometime. Bumped out of the menage.
And now we have Truco as a friggin' Big Dan hero. Every time I see this dude on screen, I'm like, there should be a TV show that's just called Big Dan Heroes. Like, he should be in it, and like Fillion should be in it. And just find me these dudes with these lantern jaws who can give good speeches on the precipice of doom.
Michael's awesome.
Oh, he's great.
He is.
Yeah. A lot of sweat in this episode, by the way.
I did notice in one of the scenes with Leon, I think it's after this, the scene we were talking about earlier where Sam tells Lee, you know, you're not the first one mm-hmm. that my wife has cheated on me with, which really gets a shocked reaction out of Lee. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are sweaty.
It's like the gun show down there. Just nothing but like everybody's got their arms out and there's a person who's just hosing them down.
Which is on right now. You know what? I think it's probably because the makeup artist that was we get to spritz you down all day. And it's not just water. That when it's that sweaty, it's an oil they put on you. It's like this clear thing. It's not an oil.
It's like Vaseline.
Very
thin Vaseline. And then it's also got like grime, so it's a little smudgy and dirty. This is just like the dirty hot episode of Battlestar Galactica.
I can just imagine. Now I have to rub it all over your biceps.
Yeah, no, I missed a spot. We're going to come back in.
No, we had amazing hair and makeup team on Battlestar.
They got really grungy in this episode. I was going to say when we started that, again, the sort of thrust of this whole episode and the last one and the one after this were to really ratchet up the tension on Battlestar, to ratchet up the tension of no food, everybody, you know, at each other's throats. You know, things are starting to rattle people. I think we felt going into this season that we had, you know, the pleasure ship had gone down in season one, I guess. And there's just the amenities are going away and how that affects people, which has a little bit of real world application kind of now.
Yeah.
So it's living the dream here of I hope I must eat algae next week. But
well, that's what we said last week. Last week for the audio for the listeners, it wasn't a full week ago for us, was it?
It was 2 days ago for us.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. It's been a long 2 days. Yeah. But it was literally like, I haven't even been home a week.
This month has been the longest year that I can remember.
Yes. But it was like watching the episode literally as I had gone to the store that morning and the hoarding and the whatever, and then watching an episode about the contamination of food and the food shortages, I just went, I don't know if I can watch this right now.
Right. Yeah, it really is. It's funny how the show is reflective of 9/11 mm-hmm. Way back when, but is reflective of a lot of crisis type moments in society, and not one I expected right now, but what we've got. So
we had the Cylon, the sick Cylon ship. I'm glad that's not on right now. I'm glad that's not the one we're covering.
Yes.
Right.
Although the humans were immune to it, but because it came from rats, but now this came from bats. Didn't COVID come from bats?
I think that's the prevailing theory. I don't know how true it is or not, because, you know, there's some fictions that get thrown around in a time like this. But anyway,
yeah.
I mean, the thing that I love about this episode is that not only is it delivering sort of story freight, right? Not only is it advancing the plots that we know, but underneath all of it is the personal plots that have been, like you said, just all weaving together. So you could just totally have a tent sequence about the Cylons are on this planet. They want this Eye of Jupiter and we're going to blow it up if they get it. And but we got to now defend this position. And it could just be like a war thing. But underneath it all, you have, here's two couples that are having like all of their dirty laundry aired between each other. And so they have to find a way to work together and find a way to just kind of tamp down their emotions and get the job done. But that's impossible because, as we'll see in like 5 minutes, Kara's Viper's going to get shot down. Her Raptor's going to get shot down. Now it's, who's going to go and save my wife? Like, you can't stop me from that. I'm going to stop you, mister, because you got to hold the line. Like, it's, all of it is informed by this emotional stories that have been building for seasons.
And you've also got Dwala and Starbuck in, you have the standoff kind of between Lee, not standoff, but between Lee and Sam. But then you've also got the scene with Dwala and Starbuck. And Starbuck's like, I know how to, you know, basically stop telling me how to do my job. It's all the undercurrents of all these like people with the relationships and everybody knows what's going on, but yet they still have to work together. And, yeah.
Although I couldn't quite figure out why Dwala is planning the military action. Like, as far as I know, Dwala, your job is to, like, open a hailing frequency, you know, and make ship to ship. But suddenly she's, you be here, and you go there, and you're going to be Foxfire and Foxtrot. And Starbuck's like, I've planned, like, 1,000 raids. Why am I just leaning back?
Well, also, just to add, you know, we did have the Adama Roslin scene where they're starting to break up.
Oh, yeah.
Because she lied to him. And then you just touched on the menage or whatever between the Cylons. Know how many are involved in that, but you know that. So every scene, and I think we worked on that a lot in the writer's room, is also trying to find that emotional place so that when you get to the hard action and you get to the you know, we're going to send down the nukes and that sort of thing, that there's, you know, there's more weight to it than just sort of a plot point. Mm-hmm. It's like there's all this other emotional freight going on here, all these other stories that are being, you know, in play. It's just that was the fun of working on this show, is making sure we didn't forget the emotional stories, you know, for the sake of the really fun space and sub robots and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the scene when Adama comes to Roslin and says, like, I heard a story that Boomer just told our Sharon about, that her baby's still alive and you were keeping it on New Caprica surface in your school. I forgot that he didn't know any of that.
I literally had that note of, I don't know why I said literally, but I had that note of, I thought Adama all this time, I thought Adama was in on the decision.
I mean, I think he was in on the decision to, you know, lie to the Agathons and tell them their kid died. But I don't know if he apparently didn't know about her just knowing where the baby was and keeping tabs on it. And
well, what? But why would you keep a baby alive and not keep tabs on it when it was a half Cylon baby?
I don't know.
but from this, it makes it seem like he wasn't aware. But then he was. Was aware.
I mean, I don't. I mean, you can speak to this better than I can, Mark, but I think you want to protect your hero from being involved in what he would consider infanticide. Like, he would never sign off on killing a baby. So he would have to think it went somewhere. Now, whether he knows what that somewhere is or not, maybe it was, we're just going to put it in the fleet somewhere and it'll be raised by people who don't know that it's a half Cylon and we'll be safe, as opposed to Roslin keeping it and choosing a mother for it and still having it in her sort of fold, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, but it's also it's. I think the down and dirty of it is it's the lie, you know, the lie that I didn't tell you the full truth about what's going on with the baby, and I think they've gotten to a point in their relationship now where you'd hope they'd you know, I think he hoped they were past that a little bit. It feels a little bit like first season almost, where she was hiding, you know, they had all those very fraught conversations. Mm-hmm. And it turns out she's still holding things back from him. I think that's hurt him as much as whatever the story of Hera is.
Yeah.
That you know, we had kind of worked through some of this, I thought. You know, I've gone the extra mile to make us co-equal heads of this system, and yet you're still hiding things from me for whatever reason. Again, just trying to find the emotional story on top of the plot story. And then it's funny where the Hera thing eventually goes with Rosalind. So not funny quotes, but interesting. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the scene where Adam has got to tell Sharon and Hilo. Mm-hmm. That their kid is still alive, which they're like, how dare you do this? Like, hey, buddy, by the way, my son is dead. Yours is actually alive. So don't like come over the top of me. But there's a moment where like Hilo goes to try and console Sharon. And she just like lifts a hand like, not now, buddy. This is not what I want. Like, I'm angry. And let me live in this anger for a little bit. Just this totally subtle throwaway, just kind of actor hand gesture that says everything about who she is in that moment and their relationship, which is don't do this now.
Yeah.
Good example where dialogue would have not helped.
Yeah. Like that's not a thing you actually want to have somebody say. And even if the audience doesn't quite notice it, if you do, you're like, oh, that says everything about those two people. Mm-hmm. That he knows her well enough that, oh no, the hand's up. I can't walk into that room now.
That is not, that's not the time I'm going to, yeah.
And yeah, so now this last run is where like everything, all hell breaks loose, where, you know, Sam and Lee are sort of at each other's throats because Kara's ship went down. The Cylons have launched more heavy raiders and they've decided like, fuck it, we'll call Adama's bluff. Adama said that he was going to nuke the planet. Let's see if he'll actually do it with his son, planet side. And he puts nukes in the tubes and he's targeting solutions. It's very like submarine movie. It's very, you know, Hunt for October, yep. Which I love. Like he's got water in the tubes, but the pod bay doors are still closed. Yeah, it's awesome.
I love Rosalind's look. It was almost my frack down. Mm. We do a frack down at the end of the episode. We'll explain it. But it when Rosalind says something about what are you doing when they're this whole like he's arming the nukes or whatever, getting them ready. Not arming the nukes, but whatever.
Yeah.
And she asks him what he's doing. He goes, getting ready to nuke the planet. And her look, it's just one of those things. Like you said, you don't need the dialogue right then. Her look literally is just like,
yeah, you're out of your mind.
She does not know in that moment if he's serious or if he's bluffing.
Right. Yeah. Again, there's one of those moments you just don't need anybody to say anything because, you know, they're so great that the power of that scene is that unspoken, what are you talking about? And I think, you know, a lot of times there were scenes in Battlestar, especially, that were very quiet. Mm-hmm. And that quiet, I think, often says more than, you know, there is the balance when you're working on a show. Sometimes the, you know, we want it, or also some, I don't think we had that much networking or problems on this one, but the network may say, we just don't understand what the emotion is here. We need somebody to say it. Sometimes we'd shoot it and then we'd cut it if we didn't need it. But often we just try to cut them in advance because sometimes you just, why overburden the scene with a bunch of blah, blah, when this really is between two people that are, you know, really like the emotions are coming across. Mm. By this point, we also knew the characters really well. We knew, you know, how this, that everybody was more than capable of delivering this kind of stuff. So wasn't like, oh, we better have a safety in case something doesn't work. You know, we didn't need that.
And to go into a to be continued off of that scene with Rosalind not knowing what's going to happen and nobody in there, nobody mm-hmm. knows what's going to happen, to go into the to be continued, like, damn it.
Son of a bitch.
Now I really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I like, you know, Battlestar has done its fair share of two-parters, some of which were designed to be two-parters and some of which just seemed like we have too much for this episode. So let's just like pad it and cut it and invent some new stuff. And some of those are great. Like we talked about, I think it's like Home Part 1 and Part 2. Like there's some material in there that is super great. Just two people talking in a room. That's outstanding. But it's absolutely like we have to not stretch the taffy, but embroider more of this quilt to cover two people instead of one person. But so I'm assuming this was always designed to be a cliffhanger. This was always designed to lead you up to the precipice.
These two were. I remember that very clearly. You know, sort of the passage led directly into this. And this one, it's funny, they were all to be continued anyway. It's just that this one ended on such a pregnant moment of, again, watching it this time after a while of not seeing it, I'm like, how did we solve all those? That's insane. I mean, okay. Now, and so, you know, I'm going to rewatch tonight. I'm going to watch the next episode because I got to know how they got out of this, how we figured that one out. that was the fun of it. And, you know, when you built to that kind of crescendo, that's so much fun. You know, Bear's music, the whole just, you know, it's to me, it's, I love that kind of an ending to a show. We had some like that in the Mutiny episodes too, which were really fun. So,
Yeah.
That's much later. No spoilers.
I don't know what you're talking about. Blah, 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 blah. There were parts of the passage that, you know, we had talked about it. We were a little bit ambivalent about it, especially some of the Katie stuff, where it just felt like the story was requiring her character to act in ways to serve the story rather than the character. In relation to Kat, like her insistence on being Detective Starbuck for reasons that didn't quite seem motivated by actual sort of inbred character desires. But this Kara is the Kara that we've always known, and she's sort of trying to pull herself out of her dark night of the soul, and it's taken longer than I think either you
clearly
or she might like. This is one of my favorite episodes, and I'm not just saying that because the writer of said episode is here. I think it does a lot of things very, very, very well.
Well, then talking about your frack down, we do a frack down at the end of the episode, which can be a good thing, like your favorite thing, your something that you like quirked on.
Sure.
Yeah. Bumped on, whatever, you know, good, bad, whatever. You want to know what my frack down is?
Yeah. What's your frack down?
My frack down of the week is actually, it was one of the earlier scenes. It was after, or earlier in the episode when Tyrell he's talking to Callie about, maybe it wasn't earlier in the midway, how he's coming from, he has a religious background, but he's not particularly religious. And he actually kind of went against, in many ways, you know, fought against his very religious parents. But now he was drawn and he's questioning himself. He's like, what made me, and goes back to what we were talking about. Was it because you're a Cylon? You know, he's drawn to finding the temple. And you see from the very beginning, like he keeps, there's this like, and we've all had feelings of something that you are inexplicable, right? And that lead you to something, maybe not a temple, but to not get in the car that day or to not whatever, right? But he's telling Callie of, but now I'm just in here and I feel this and I feel, I don't know if he says truth or whatever. And I just found that scene very, I just found it a very interesting scene and a very beautiful scene in just explaining about people's beliefs and not understanding their own beliefs. Or I'm not a religious person myself, but it wasn't like I was like, oh, now I am. But it was just watching that scene to me just explained a lot about people and trusting your gut instinct and not following something when you don't really even know why you're doing it or whatever. I'm not making any sense, but I just found it a beautiful scene. And that's my crackdown.
That's pretty good. Mine is the scene when Baltar walks into that sort of diplomatic chamber.
I didn't finish mine.
Okay. Would you like to continue?
I'll tell it after.
Okay.
Sorry.
You get a two-part frackdown.
I didn't actually get to the point of why it was my frackdown.
Okay. Well, yours is a teaser then. It's that scene when Baltar walks in and you see the weird conflicted emotions on his face, which break when he sees Laura Roslin. Because he still has some love for her in a weird way, despite all the bad things that he's done and all of the ways that she has attempted to outmaneuver him or whatever. You know, he's he like almost starts to well up when he sees that she's alive and he's glad to see her. And for her to just like put up her shields and not even acknowledge him. And then just the totality of that sequence with him in it and realizing that first he thinks he has control because he's the one who brought them to the Eye of Jupiter. Then he realizes that he really doesn't when she's like, the less this man speaks, the better it's going to go for you. And then once the Cavil decides to just offer him up as a sweetener to the pot, which is, if you give us Eye of Jupiter, we'll let you live and you can have Baltar too. Like his just... The pendulous nature of his emotional state in that scene is kind of lovely. And, you know, nobody quite does that kind of thing like James does.
Yes.
And so just watching him shift from, you know, cocksure to a little broken to sad puppy dog. Wait, they're going to do what to me? No, not me.
Yeah.
Guy is Baltar.
Well, to go back to mine, it was basically about the same thing of the emotional side of it was the point at the end where he's saying, now I actually finally feel some sort of a truth in here, and relating it to his parents. Like, he's like, I wish I could just show my parents this. And then and I'm about to blow it all up, and he's literally got the charges because he's following orders to blow this place up. When he's finally feeling settled and Callie's saying, you seem calmer.
You're at peace.
Like, you're at peace. And he's about to blow it all up. Hmm. So that was, I just hadn't finished it.
Nice.
Okay. I don't know why I thought of that while you started yours, but anyway. Like, I'm not done. Do you have a frack down on the spur of the moment?
On the spur of the moment? Yeah. You know, I think it's probably the Lee Kara scene because it's so emotionally difficult sort of to watch. And I really like the idea that she throws up religion as the reason that she can't divorce Anders. And it's like, you're cheating on him. but she has this line about something like, yeah, but that kind of doesn't count. And it's just, and yet Lee, who you would think would be the more sort of reverent one, is sort of like, let that go. Duval is gone. If we could get together. Not that he says it like that, but I mean, it was really fun to just play with those two characters in that scene and watch how they did it, because it's so, it's both sexy and then it's so emotionally intense. And, you know, it's two broken people trying to figure out how they can continue with each other in a world that won't allow that to happen. And they made bad choices or wrong choices. I don't know if they're bad. They just made choices. And those choices are coming back to haunt them now because their off and on love affair has been the show forever. So I don't know. I like that moment just because it sort of epitomized the emotional side of Battlestar as much as the when we see all the Cylons coming out of the ship, which is probably my second coolest moment. when you see all those. I remember talking to Gary Hutzel about that. Such amazing effects. And I said, is this going to cost too much? I mean, we're calling for like 10 of them or something.
The Centurions, when they came out of the ship on the planet.
Yeah. And he said, one to 10, want 50? Like, no problem. once we have one, we just make more of them, you know? And so, I would be remiss not to go into, you know, just saying how much this show was impacted by Gary and his team going the extra mile constantly with their special effects to make it as amazing it is. It's just every episode we'd be astonished by what they accomplished. And, you know, again, this is 15 years ago. Technology's improved some, but watching it again, you know, it's still
that's good. What we said from the very beginning when we started this podcast and started the rewatch was how amazed we both were that the effects really still held up. You notice maybe once or twice here or there little bit, but very rarely. And it really holds up well.
Yeah. I mean, if there's ever an issue, it's like the resolution is a little low, but it's never like, oh, that just looks bad. And sometimes the DP will even push the grit and the film stock to help mask the low resolution of stuff. Like, it was really, you're at the bleeding edge of when you could do this stuff for real on TV at a budget. Yeah. And it looks great. It still looks great.
Yeah. Did a great job.
Gary, the late Gary Hetzel, the late Gary Hetzel. Was, yep. was so good and yep. such a team player too. He was,
oh my God.
He was excited about it as anyone.
Yeah. Yep.
So Mark, what are you working on now that you can talk about? Is there anything you want to plug? Is there a place people can find you out in the world?
Well, I finished a show last year, called Swamp Thing.
The late lamented Swamp Thing.
Yes. And, so now I was working on some other things. I don't know, kind of, you know, this will probably seem dated, hopefully in a year or two when someone listens to it, like this crisis will be over, but you know, but I have a couple of things been working on, but nothing I can really announce yet. And, that's kind of where I'm at.
Gotcha. And you are on the Twitters. Yes. I do see you bouncing every now and again.
I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook and, talking mostly about, you know, sort of what movie I watched yesterday type stuff.
Outstanding.
And, I try to keep out there, but, you know, it's a interesting business as you guys well know.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, thank you, Mark, for taking time out of your quarantine, the Coco Vero summer we're having in Los Angeles, where everybody's sheltering in place. Thank you for taking some time to shelter with us. So we will be back after a bit of a break.
We got a couple week break coming up.
We got a couple week break, yeah, because in the broadcast order, there was about 5 weeks they took between the passage and the Eye of Jupiter. And so we might not take 5 weeks, but we're going to take a little bit of time.
Two or three,
and kind of, you know, get back up to speed and hopefully buy enough toilet paper and canned goods to survive the coming apocalypse. But for now, that is another episode of the Battlestar Galacticast. We want to thank the good folks at Sci-Fi Wire for continuing to fund our insanity. We would like to thank our guest, Mark Verheiden, for taking time out of his evening to come and play with us. Yay! Thank you, Mark Verheiden! And always,
Bear McCreary,
the great and mighty Bear McCreary, for his theme song. And as always, Tricia Helfer for opening her house to a couple of diseased mooks like me and our audio engineer, Brett Boehm.
Thank you guys for joining. Yes.
Hooray.
Braving the Cat House again.
Braving the Cat House, which sounds like way cooler than it actually is.
They were all quiet tonight.
No, there's another thing that's called a cat house that's has nothing to do with actual cats.
Is that a prostitute? Is that a brothel?
That is a brothel.
Oh, this is not a brothel.
This is not at all. So you're welcome for braving the cat house. That's not actually a cat house.
Bye.
Bye.